Can we formally open the meeting?
Yes.
All right. I understand I'm David Lloyd. I chair this meeting, admittedly under not very satisfactory circumstances, but it's the best we can do. This being a public meeting, I should, on behalf of the council, open the meeting by acknowledging the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation, on whose country we are meeting today, their elders past and present. It is also appropriate in opening this meeting to for the panel members to say who we are. I'm David Lloyd. In addition to chairing this meeting, I chair a number of other panels. I'm a lawyer. I'm a QC. I'm a former judge of the Land and Environment Court. I'm a former acting judge of the Supreme Court. I am currently a professor of law at Western Sydney University. All right, Ms. Morrell.
Good afternoon, Jan Morrell. I'm a town planner by profession, over 40 years' experience. My last full-time job was with the Land and Environment Commission as a commissioner for Land and Environment Court as a commissioner for 14 years, and my only consultancy work now is to be an independent expert and chair of a number of panels in the Sydney region, including the state Sydney East region.
And Mary Lynn Taylor?
Mary Lynn Taylor. I'm a planning lawyer, and I sit on a number of these panels across New South Wales.
And Mr. Hawke?
My name's Ken Hawke. I'm the community representative on the panel. I've lived in the Inner West area for over 40 years, and I've had a 40-year career in local government, my last position being as Director of Planning and Environmental Sciences at Marrickville Council.
All right. Well, with that, we could move straight on to the agenda itself. No, the first thing is declarations of interest. I don't think there are any interests to be declared.
No
declaration from me.
All right. Then we can move on to the items on the agenda. The first one is the declarations of pecuniary interest for 2019 and 2020. This is a formal matter which every panel member has to comply with, and I think they have been complied with, and that is for noting. The next item is a standing item, a report from the council in accordance with a ministerial direction, itemising the number of pending local planning matters. We have looked at the schedule, and we have given a direction that the panel must be, that any matter that's been in the system for more than 180 days must be reported to the panel, ready or not. And that has already been determined. So we can now move on to item number three. This is 111 Moore Street, Leichhardt. This is a proposed change of use of an existing industrial warehouse and office to a fitness studio and office on one lot within that industrial complex. We have noticed that there is a number of people who wish to address the panel on this item. Is Deb McKenzie on the line? Do we have Deb McKenzie on the line?
Sorry, Deb, you seem to be on mute.
I'm unmuted now.
All right, we can see and hear you. The protocol governing these meetings says that members of the public may address the panel for up to 3 minutes. You're regarded as a member of the public. Your 3 minutes starts now.
Thank you, David. I'm Deb McKenzie. I'm a consultant planner. I work with Andrew Martin Planning, and we've been engaged by the unit managers, the corporation of SP38916 to act on their behalf for all of those unit holders apart from the subject unit being Unit 8. We just like to say that we agree with council's reporting an assessment of this application, and we certainly do support their reasons for refusal. We would just like to perhaps add a couple of things extra to the, without going over the council planner's report, just that we noted, we also issued a one-page submission, which I believe would have been circulated to the panel, so you will possibly have those in front of you. But just to go through those, we don't believe that the details contained in the application were full and correct, and we had outlined a number of misleading pieces of information within that application, including the parking space allocation, the location of the disabled toilets within the complex and how they're actually used. Their attempts to present a compliant application without what we believe to be due diligence to the actual facts and the actual site itself. The unauthorised use of the premises, we're not clear, but we believe that they had actually started operation of the premises prior to COVID-19 and then had it shut down, which was an unauthorised use at the time. The adverse traffic generation, I believe, has been clearly enunciated in the planner's report, so I won't go over that. I think that's quite clear. Insufficient on-site parking and unsafe pedestrian access. You would have seen today that inspecting the site that in order to access this site, you have to walk up the common driveway to actually access that site. That means that all clients, which there could be a couple of hundred a day, including children, would need to actually access via that common driveway. That is it's a concern for all of the unit holders and all of the operators there, because you could have trucks and things coming and going at various times, and it's just a safety issue to have to rely on that. And the adverse noise impacts of the operation of the fitness centre, I believe you'll be hearing from others about the impacts that were not explicitly covered very thoroughly within the acoustic report there, but also the type of businesses and things that are there as well. So overall, just in summary, we believe that this business doesn't fit with that complex.
That's your three minutes.
That's fine.
But no, you can finish.
We just don't think that it fits with the other businesses within that complex because of everything that we've outlined and that we've submitted, and I think you'll hear from others today as well, and that it should be refused based on the reasons set out in Council's report and within the submissions received. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Now we have a number of other speakers. Is Monique Pereira here? Are you online?
Hi. Hello.
Yes, you can proceed. First of all, tell us who you are and where you live.
Sure. My name is Monique Pereira and I live in Balmain. I am one of the founding members of the gym, and I actually do not support the refusal for this gym to be opened. It's a personalised service, different to other gyms. I have found that a number of gyms, the one that I'm currently in, which is also a local gym, is very crowded and are larger groups. This particular model of gym is for smaller groups and more personalised, which appeals to me mainly because of the COVID safe reasons as well. I just find that it would be a safer environment rather than being on top of each other in a gym environment. The other reason why I joined this particular gym is because it's walking distance to my home. As part of my overall fitness, it's really important that I have a gym that I can walk to from home, that completes my fitness and it's part of my routine. So that's the other reason. I also know of a few other members who've joined up for that same reason and, that are planning to walk. And finally, as a small business owner myself, I think it's really important to support these kind of ventures, particularly in our community. A lot of small businesses are doing it tough, and I think it's really important that we support businesses that are helping people with their well-being, and fitness has proved to be a really important part of keeping us all happy in this struggling environment. So my husband and I both support the business for those reasons. And just finally too, sorry, I just heard the other lady speaking previously about how she observed that the business may have been in operation and then closed and unauthorised. To my knowledge, that is absolutely not true. I've been a member from the very start, and to my knowledge, I've absolutely no knowledge of this particular premises being open to the public and then closed again.
All right, before you go, any questions from the panel?
I'd like to ask a question.
Sure.
Monique, you said that the groups that attend are smaller groups. What is a smaller group in number?
It can reach up to around 10 to 12, maybe 14 maximum, but I think from my understanding with other similar gyms with this particular franchise of business, you're looking at more around 6 to 8. Currently the gym that I'm with has about 30 people in the room. And although they practice safe distancing and hand sanitizers and wiping down of equipment, it really doesn't feel that particularly safe. And I do understand that this new premises is very large, so there'll be plenty of space for people. And I do understand also that there'll be very good practices put in place as well to make sure that people are kept safe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Next registered speaker is Bradley Mikulif.
Hello, and thank you.
Yes. First of all, tell us your name and address, and then proceed.
My name is Bradley Mikulif. I live on 8 Foster Street in Leichhardt. I am pro-opening the gym, so we're very supportive of this venture going ahead, and hope the panel sees that as well. Just in terms of background, I've been in the fitness or a part of fitness gyms now for a while. Shed some concern about the opening statement about how noise and so forth. I mean, there's plenty of gyms in the area that are A, housed within apartment blocks. So I know of quite a few where the gyms sit underneath residential apartment blocks without any incident, without any concern, without any noise violations. So I'm concerned about the rebuke, how noise impediment to the other businesses would be in place. I know, and I've taken some visits out to the location and the site. Clearly there is no danger walking through the marked side path to enter the gym. There's also the neighbouring businesses have bandsaws and so forth running, so which are quite loud. So I'm sort of unsure about how the comment of noise impediment or a problem with noise would occur from the gym. There's also been plenty of street parking. So I've done some random drive paths at various, you know, times of the day where there's an abundance of street parking, 15 to 20 car parking spots on the street a day. So a parking issue raises some concern that, you know, there's a lot of street parking. It's mainly tailored to locals who are within walking distance. So my aim is, and what I've done in the past, is walk to the gym and walk home. So I can't understand the arguments, to be honest. And again, in a time when businesses are closing down, we have an opportunity to support, you know, locals who are opening a local business, which is supporting the community, which is also supporting economic growth. So it's a little bit concerning that, you know, there's a fair amount of objection to such a positive impact on the community and the neighbourhood. Being of two real concerns is parking, which should be negligible, and noise complaints, where we're living in the West where there's A, planes going overhead, B, the complex has industrial equipment being used, you know, throughout the day, makes me question the real reason as to why there's objection. I can't really understand how this would impact neighbouring businesses. So that's me in within 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, David, you're on mute.
I'm sorry. Do panel members have any questions of Mr. McGill?
Thank you.
No?
No.
All right. Is Jude Batrack there?
I am. Hello. I am just turning on my video. I've got a little bub here, so if she screams, I apologise in advance.
All right, we can see you and hear you.
Great.
Tell us, first of all, your name and address.
Yeah, so my name's Judith Batrack, and I live in 28 Daniel Street in Leichhardt, near the dog park down at the Hawthorne stop.
All right, your 3 minutes starts now.
So thank you so much for the consideration. So I am a prospective member, and my husband, my little baby girl, and I, we bought a house in Leichhardt 4 years ago in Daniel Street. And the two big reasons why I would really like you to consider this gym opening is, firstly, we, both my husband and I, haven't found something yet that suits us. So we're currently spending our exercising budget in the CBD, which I think is a real shame given how wonderful the inner west is, and it would be much nicer to have something close to home, especially now that I'm on maternity leave. So Carla was really hoping to offer something that's intimate, that is COVID safe, obviously, and it's quite tailored to our needs. So Pilates, yoga, aerobics classes, and even a mums and bubs class where you can bring the little one in the pram, which is wonderful. And I was, looking forward to meeting a lot of young, like-minded couples, which there's an increase of those moving to the inner west and hopefully connecting with a really nice community, because it can get quite lonely. And the other point that I wanted to make was regarding the concern around the parking. So I believe Carla submitted a little map where she dotted us out. I think we are one of the furthest dots. It's about a 20-minute walk, I would say, from my house, but I don't have a car midweek, and I don't think many other young mums would necessarily either. And B, I do the bay walk daily because that's on my near my house, and that is 10 kilometres. So I really think it's completely reasonable for me to push the pram up that little hill to the gym, exercise, and go back home. So I certainly don't think that that many locals would necessarily drive if they're already in the mindset to exercise. And that's all. And you stayed quiet, which is great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before you go, any questions from the panel?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. The next speaker, the final speaker we have, is Chris Goff. Is Chris Goff there?
Yes, you're right. Yes, Judge, I am.
No, not Judge anymore.
Yes, Chairman, I am available, and I'm ready to speak.
Right.
Thank you for the opportunity. Just by way of clarification from one of the questions that Mary Lynn Taylor asked, hopefully you've got a copy of the documents that have been provided by council. Can I take you to page 65 of the bundle or of the report that contains a copy of the proposed plan of management for the centre? And if you can go to page 65, which should be the second page.
Yes, I have that.
Okay. You will have heard some of the speakers talk about the unusual nature of this gym as opposed to normal gyms. And you'll see in the second paragraph, although this gym is going to be open for, they say, 5:15 to 7:30 p.m. Monday to Friday, if you go down to about 0.6 on the page, in fact, each day, there'll be a class at 5:15, there'll then be a class at 6:15, and each of those times will have a class. You'll also have heard the evidence regarding, or the statement regarding, the number of patrons, and just above this, you'll see the maximum expected is 14, but what they anticipate would be more close between 6, 8 or 10 people per class. So that's one class at 5:15 in the morning, and that will have potentially 10 people. And so throughout Monday to Thursday, they are having 7 classes only on that day. You'll observe that they're not open for classes during, for example, the peak for the local schools between 8:30 to 9:15 and in the afternoon when school is breaking up. So the use of they pick those hours so that there won't be a conflict between school mums and the users of this gym. Secondly, panel, you would have been hopefully received this plan that's been referred to, which my client prepared, showing where the location of the gym is and drawn a circle of 1.7 meter kilometres, which and shown the number of where the membership currently reside. On the right-hand side, a list of the current members, although it hasn't operated yet, and they've asked the question, will you walk or will you drive? And you'll see the vast majority intend to drive. We've also arranged a panel for a new traffic report to be prepared. The first one, which is referred to in some detail in the council officer's report, clearly was incorrect in that it relied on cast parking spaces within the strata plan. And of course, they're common property and that can't be used without the consent. So the new traffic report has all of the parking being provided potentially on street. And on page 9 of that report, they did an on-street parking survey showing the number of car parking spaces during the times of the business that would be available for parking if people do in fact park or drive to the centre. It is anticipated, panel, that the majority of users of this gym in this inner city area will commute by walking. And that's the purpose of the plan. Yes, Your Honour.
Your 3 minutes are up.
Thank you, Your Honour.
But no, if you have something important to say.
Well, just if I could just a couple of points on Deb McKenzie's comments. She referred to expecting a couple of hundred patrons a day. That just won't be the case, panel. It's 14, maximum of 14 for those limited number during the day. It only operates internally, so there's no external works. The noise will be all within the building, none of the occupants or the users they'll simply come to the gym, do their exercise and leave. And we strongly recommend there is a need for this type of unique gym in the area, panel, and I submit that it is an appropriate use, and the parking concerns that council have, and in fact are the only reasons they are recommending approval generally, we consider there's adequate on-street parking for the number of patrons who will drive to the centre. Thank you.
Just a question, Mr. Goff.
Yes, Judge.
Has any consideration been given, if we grant consent, to a time-limited consent to see how it goes?
I've thought about that, Chair, and if my client would accept a time-limited consent. The reason traditionally we oppose them because of the expense you've got to put into it to, of course, set it up and then take it away if it doesn't work. The setup costs in this aren't that significant, and if that's the idea of the panel, a time-limited consent, I would say that my clients would accept that on the basis that at the end of the time a further application can be made to amend the consent to allow it to operate then without any restriction.
Do panel members have any questions?
I have a question, thank you. And I'm just looking at the plan of management before me, and is there a maximum number of people identified being on the premises at one time? I can't see it, but...
Commissioner, there was a class of 14 maximum during any of those classes, and I think you'll find at the top of... the next page it says staffing. Do you see that?
Yep. Would it be unreasonable or not be unreasonable to put, say, a maximum of 20 people on the premises at any one time?
No, that would not be unreasonable.
Because I noticed that they're 45-minute classes and yet the classes are hourly, so that allows for...
Coming and going, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the panel?
No.
If it be a time limited consent, what would be a reasonable time? Do we have any views?
If we were minded to make it a time limited consent, you'd probably allow it to be fully operational for 12 months prior to it being reviewed.
Any other comments from the panel members?
I'd endorse 12 months if we were minded to.
All right. Now, question for the panel. Do you wish to defer this until after the public meeting, or shall we determine it now?
Well, if I can just speak Chair. I thought that our procedure was in this COVID situation was to hear all matters and then determine them in a private session, especially as we have so many on the agenda today.
Yes, I agree. Panel happy with that?
Yes. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you all for your input. We will defer this to after the public meeting and come to a determination.
Thank you
for your attendance. And with that, we can move on to the next item, item number 4, which is the proposed development at number 9 Phoebe Street, Balmain. And we have, again, a number of people who wish to speak. I'll call each of you in turn. Firstly, is Luke Collins here? Do we have Luke Collins?
Yes. Hello. Thank you, Chairman.
Now, as I said earlier, members of the public may, under the protocol, address us for up to 3 minutes. You don't have to go for through 3 minutes, but up to 3 minutes.
I'll do my best.
Name and address first.
So Luke Collins, and I live in 2 Phoebe Street and have done for the last 10 years.
Which is directly opposite.
That's correct.
All right. Proceed.
Thank you. We're really concerned about Council's change of approach. When we compare the detailed assessment that was done in January, which required a deletion of the garage and office above it, with a factually incorrect recommendation report, which has been provided only last week, I appreciate the balance of expert views that the panel provides, and rely upon you to uphold the design principles that were raised in Council's original assessment of the DA, as well as the many concerns raised by the community. The initial DA was received by Council in October of last year, and as you can see from the map that's been provided, most of the notified neighbours objected, 17 in total. Our objection centred around the devastating loss of our water views from our living room, dining room and kitchen, as well as the veranda sitting area, which the five of us spend most of our time in. Our whole house, in fact, is completely orientated to enjoy these views over number 9. The development, if it were approved, would block all of our views of the marina and its boats. We would also lose the ability to see the harbour foreshore as well as 60% of the body of water. Anyone that comes to our house could see that this DA, if approved, would hugely impact the way that we live. So in January, we were relieved when we read Council's report and understood that it understood our concerns and had provided for, the applicant with clear direction to address the issue of view sharing. If I quote from the report, it says, a single carport with open walls and no garage door with a height no greater than number 11 would be considered. This would allow views to the water and allow the existing main dwelling to be seen from Phoebe Street. You can imagine then how we felt when a week ago we received notification that Council had now changed course and overridden the Senior Assessment Officer's expert opinion on the issue, as well as community concerns regarding the DA. The new report is not convincing in its assessment. For instance, the reinstatement of a tiny sliver of the shoreline is not compensation for the view loss, and the photos that are provided by the applicant incorrectly portray the views on page 128. The report to the panel's classification of our view loss as minor to moderate was wrongfully assessed. Based on tenacity, our loss of views meet all the criteria to be classified as severe. And yes, a more skillful design could have been achieved. The house with the proposed additions is already... The house with the proposed... I'm almost finished. Is already 5 bedrooms with an office. An additional office, adding a further 2 levels from the street to a 3-level existing house, is indulgent in light of the impact it would have on the views from all of our living areas. Could I just finish by saying, I think that we should be supporting the Senior Assessment Officer from council. Her January report was extremely detailed and well researched on the issues, and the proposal involves significant departures from development standards. Thank you for your consideration and your action.
All right. Any questions from the panel?
No.
No questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Collins. Next is Valicia Jolly. Valicia, have I got the...
Valicia Jolly, yes.
All right. Now, you give your address as Elliot Street, Balmain. Where's Elliot Street?
Elliot Street is... it goes down from Darling Street in Balmain. I don't know if you know Balmain, but it goes down from Darling Street down to the water. And on the right is Phoebe Street, which is the house where the house in question is located.
So
I go, when I go to Elkington Park, it's just around the corner, and I walk along Phoebe Street to get to the park, as do a lot of other people in my street and the streets nearby. This is the sort of main route, if you like, to the park. And the reason I'm speaking today is because I'm most upset and concerned about this beautiful Victorian house, and it's going to be spoilt if this recommendation goes ahead. But I'm a bit nervous, so please forgive me about that.
You've already started speaking, so we'll count to 3 minutes from now.
Okay. Oh, thank you very much.
Good.
I'm a long-term Balmain resident, over 40 years, in fact, and live in a Victorian Italianate house in Elliot Street that I have carefully renovated to return it to its former glory. I walk along Phoebe Street regularly to Elkington Park, as do many people I see. Organised walking groups are often seen pointing out features of houses along the road. The proposed additions to this Victorian sandstone house are not in the spirit of the aims of Balmain, being in a heritage conservation area. The large building of a garage and an office above would make the street seem like a back lane, and therefore not as safe nor as pretty as it currently is. It is one of the most beautiful Victorian sandstone houses, and to be denied its contribution to the streetscape by putting a garage in front of it, even for half the width of the boundary, would take away the ambience of the house and garden that has been enjoyed by residents of Balmain for 129 years. I understand it was owned by the head mariner, and as such is important to our history. The reason the house currently has no car parking is that the wrought iron fence is original and set in sandstone supports. It should not be removed at all. And council usually are really strong on protecting the heritage that has been left by not allowing it to be eroded little by little until there are no longer examples such as this freestanding Victorian house with a lovely garden that drops down to its gabled entry. This free-flowing garden down to the house softens the heavily built forms either side of the property. I understand that the DA is about building basically another house in its front garden space. In essence, the additional and over-the-top amount of development on that land would be wedged in between the house and the street, which I thought was not allowed to be done in front of a heritage house. They already have a three-story house with amazing water views. To double the size of it on a block that would then impact the streetscape is over the top. It is a typical example of overdevelopment. I have always found council very onerous in the obligations it puts on residents to preserve and even reinstate heritage features when submitting plans. This DA would delete internal walls and change the nature of the house to basically be an add-on to a modern house built on its front garden, thus subordinating the heritage house to be below, literally, the modern three-level additional building. And this would be done without preserving the integrity of the original function and design of the heritage house and garden. Please ensure that this DA is refused on the grounds that heritage should be more considerately preserved and the garage just and the garage and office removed from the DA because they would obstruct views from the street to the house, shoreline and marina. And that, I would imagine
that's your 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah, can't just, I've got three more lines.
Go ahead then.
Impact greatly the views of many, many residents on the slope above it that currently rely on the fact that it was built down to the water in 1891 in order to allow its neighbours above to also have the enjoyment of looking out over the wonderful harbour and myriad of sailing boats and ferries that go past. Thank you for your time today and especially for the extra time. And I hope you will take my concerns seriously. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Any questions from the panel?
Thank you.
No.
No? Okay. Thank you very much. Jeremy Lawrence, please. Is Jeremy Lawrence with us? If not, then I'll move to Kerry Gordon. Is Kerry Gordon here?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. We see you. We hear you. All right. Your name and
address. I'm a consultant town planner.
Yes.
And I'm acting on behalf of the owners of number 7 Phoebe Street, which is the adjoining property, are at a funeral today, so they couldn't attend.
So number 7 is to the left or to the right as we look at it?
To the right.
All right. Thank you.
If you have your plans there, I'd like you to go to the survey plan because that shows the location and the relativity of the two properties.
Yes.
And where our property is on the right. Originally, it was a single property and it's been subdivided into two properties. And as you can see, it's quite an unusual shaped subdivision, which was clearly done because the existing dwelling on my client's property was at the front of the street and the existing dwelling on the subject site was further back. So it's got a kinked common boundary, basically. When my client redeveloped his property, he knocked down a dwelling that had a window on the boundary adjoining the front yard of the subject site, and that window was replaced in the new dwelling with a ventilation louver system. I'm not sure if the panel has the submission that was lodged by myself. There was a series of photographs in it, so if you have those, it would make it easier to understand. Otherwise, I can share my screen, whichever is easier.
Right, that'll be quicker rather than us wading through bundles of papers here.
Okay, let's see if I can share the screen. This is all relatively new for me. Oh, wait a sec. Wrong way. Most disabled participant share screening. You would need to let me in to share the screen.
Kathy?
Sorry, Jan, that's, I'm Tina. I'm host.
Sorry, I know this is eating into the time.
Okay, I'm actually sorry. I'm not the normal host, so I'm just trying to figure this out. Sorry, just one moment.
If you have the submission, I could just take you through the pages of the submission. I'm just not sure if that's available.
I would have the submission because I did that. One second now.
So if you just put the submission up on the screen for the panel, then I can explain.
Sorry, Kerry, can I just check with you? Was the submission from Jeremy?
No, it was from me. It was the second submission to do with the amended plans. So it was dated 21st of May.
Okay.
I don't think that's a submission to the panel.
No, it was a submission to the application, not to the panel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
we're
not going to have that on hand.
Ah, okay. Okay, well, I'll try and give you a visual understanding from the plans then. If you go to plan 1104, which is the level one plan, it shows the relationship between the entry stairs and courtyard and my client's property on the right-hand side. So my client has a ventilation opening, which has louvers on it, which adjoins the second planter box from the street adjoining the stairs and goes a little bit further into the courtyard next to the entry foyer. It's 3.2 metres long, and that provides a number of different services to the dwelling. It provides for ventilation for the drainage system. So the drainage system takes all of the ground flow waters within that void and then pipes them further down. So the need for ventilation there is so that there's not dampness created in that void space, so that the dampness can escape. The second thing that the system does is it provides light and ventilation to a number of rooms within the house. There's a storage room at one end, which has an entry door into the ventilation system, and that's a glazed entry door, so it provides some light to that room. There are then two bathrooms that have windows directly opening onto that system, so it provides ventilation and light for the two bathrooms. And then there's a bedroom, which has a secondary window opening onto that system, so it provides cross-through ventilation for the bedroom and also some additional light to the bedroom. So if that ventilation shaft is blocked off, it has impact in terms of light and ventilation to the rooms, and also will create an area that would get very damp in terms of the drainage system for the dwelling. And obviously if you open the room, the windows from the bedrooms or the bathroom, then that damp smell would enter into those rooms and cause problems. So whilst my client understands that he has no easement for light and ventilation, therefore there's no legal reason why that must be maintained. If there's a window there, presumably, and it's in the front yard area of the subject site. So there's no reason why it couldn't be maintained. And in my submission, I actually gave a suggestion as to how it could be fixed. You go to plan 1203, which is a section. You can see bedroom 4. Bedroom 4 is adjoining where the light and ventilation louvers are. And bedroom 4...
That's your 3 minutes, but we wasted a lot of time looking at things. You proceed.
Thank you. So bedroom 4 has a floor-to-floor level, which is really quite large. It's 3.4 metres. So the floor to ceiling presumably is at least 2.7, and then you've got a very large area above that that you could play with to lower the part immediately adjoining the ventilation shaft. So even if you drop the floor to ceiling to 2.7, that would allow you to drop the area immediate next to the ventilation shaft by 400 mils so that the ground level was level with the ventilation shaft, which is RL 12.7. So if you go back to that entry foyer area, it doesn't affect the entry foyer. It basically affects where the planter boxes are. So if you could lower the ground to RL 12.7 and remove the planter boxes, then the ventilation could be retained. It would have no impact on the amenity of the dwelling other than to have a 2.7 floor to ceiling in the bedroom rather than presumably about a 3.1, which is what I think they would have at the moment because of the floor to floors involved. The only other matter that we'd like to address is a condition, which is condition 23 to do with the geotech. Because as you could see in the section, they're excavating almost two full stories next to the dwelling. My client's very concerned that that's going to have an impact on his dwelling as well. And we would just like to amend G of 23. So G of 23 recommends that...
Page number, please.
Page
149.
Thank you. Right. So G talks about information about the method of excavation and construction, vibration emissions, etc. When he was excavating for his property, apparently they came across iron stones. He was concerned that there was a need for a borehole to work out the strength of the rock in the area that they're doing such a large excavation, and that they specify the type of excavation method required and that there would need to be vibration monitoring. So we would just ask that that condition be amended to strengthen it a bit, given that it's two stories of excavation right on a boundary with the wall of the adjoining property.
So how would you reword that condition?
Regarding sort of excavation, I suppose you would ask for a noise and vibration report, recommending vibration monitoring. And you would ask potentially for the geotech to carry out a borehole in the vicinity of that two stories of excavation to determine the most appropriate method of excavation. I'm assuming they're going to have to saw or something along those lines, because you couldn't excavate so closely with anything other than sawing, I wouldn't have thought, without going over the vibration criteria. So it's really just more information and that being honed in at the construction.
I've inserted the words, looking at the condition, recommendations regarding the method of excavation and construction, vibration, emissions, and monitoring.
So definitely and monitoring, but yes. I think there is also the need for a borehole to check the strength of the rock that's being excavated.
Wouldn't that come within the following words, identifying risks to existing structures?
At the moment, they haven't done any borehole testing in the previous geotech that we've seen.
I mean, there's no consent at the moment, so they wouldn't have really done anything. I think those words, identifying risks, etc., together with monitoring, would be sufficient.
And then the only other thing I would ask is, if you don't have the photographs in my submission, is it possible that I could email it to you for your consideration? Because it's got photos of all of the things I was talking about.
I have seen them. They have.
Okay.
We have been sent previously all the submissions. And I have read what you have put, including the photographs you have supplied.
Okay, excellent.
They're there in the computer somewhere, and I'll just have to dig them out. Any questions from the panel?
Sorry, I just missed the very first part, Ms. Gordon. If you could just say number 7 was originally part of this property.
Yeah, so if you have a look at the subdivision.
That's fine, yep.
Yeah, so it was originally one lot, and it was subdivided with an irregular boundary.
Yep.
Basically to go around the two dwellings that were on it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions, panel? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you for your help. This
is all right, thank you. Now, next person is Gazelle Collins. I'm sure we've got Gazelle.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Nice to meet you, David.
You give your address as number 4 Phoebus Street.
Yes, really, I just really wanted to point out that we bought both blocks, 2 and 4 Phoebe Street.
I see.
And in the assessment report, it was sort of dismissed as, well, we've got a wide boundary, but actually it's two blocks. So it's we just haven't developed that block because we actually considered the views behind it, which is the flats on Glassop Street, and didn't build it in and build it up. I did want to address you and explain a little bit of context to this house.
All right, your 3 minutes starts now.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it. I grew up in Balmain in a Victorian house on Adolphus Street. I've lived in 3 houses now in Balmain, which is most of my life. We bought 2 and 4 Phoebe Street 10 years ago when we were the only prospective buyers that were mad enough, if you like, to buy it because there was a lot of work that was required on it. We bought it from Kev Enderby and his wife Dorothy, and I don't know whether you know Kev Enderby, but he was the Attorney General under Gough Whitlam. And he was also the head of the Global Esperanto Society, and he lived in this house since the 1950s. He renovated it to capture the views from every living space. He even enlarged the veranda where we met him many times and sat with a glass of wine. He even made the front bedroom, the front drawing room, into a master bedroom, and he was extremely egalitarian in his views. He wanted everyone to appreciate the views. He built the walls low, and we have no gate across our front entrance purposefully, and we have respected that. Our DA, we renovated about 3 years ago, and our DA had nil objections and was fully compliant. We built at the rear of our property to ensure others could share the views. Now, when we get to this point, we are absolutely devastated that that philosophy of view sharing has not been followed by the applicant for number 9. In fact, no one from council has been here to understand the impacts that we have if we lose this view, apart from Anna Walker, who wrote the initial assessment report in January. And I quote from her that whilst it is acknowledged that the proposal height matches number 7, this is not the form or height that council wants replicated in the streetscape when there are existing water views that will be obstructed. It is noted that more recent approvals at number 5 and 11 and 1, 3 and 5 Tilbury Avenue are low in height and more open in the case of number 5. In other words, all the recent precedences along Phoebe Street, which turns into Tilbury Avenue, they have all been required to be a one-storey garage if they had an existing garage. And there's a couple that don't have any garages either. So the assessment, I think, by this recent report goes in the face of that initial assessment report that was written with a lot of research and actually adequately captured the concerns of the community. So I'd like you to please consider the impact that this DA would have on our enjoyment of our harbour activities. And I just want to give you a sense of that. There's many sailing boats that go past. The rowing club's just down the end of the street. The marina has many boats that rock gently in the water. You can even hear them from our house, as well as the shoreline in its green lawn and dipping to the boats. It is hard to capture these simple hazards in a static photo, so I hope you can picture it from this description and realise how impactful it would be if it was blocked out from us, as well as the neighbours that live all around us that have also objected. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you.
Sorry, yes. Mr. Chair. Yep, you're.
You just missed what I said, but you will recall that Kep Enderby was a later appointed a judge of the Supreme Court.
He was a wonderful man, and we went to his funeral in reflection of what he did here.
I knew him. All right, now, Scott Barwick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott? Can you hear me and see me?
Yes. I can hear you and see you.
Thank you, Chair.
You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. My name's Scott Barwick from SJB Planning. I'm a consultant planner. I'm speaking on behalf of Giselle and Luke Campbell of 2 Phoebe Street. Chair, the panel would have received a submission from JQ Legal raising a number of concerns over the ability for the panel to approve the application in accordance with the recommendation. And I'll briefly touch on a concern. For example, the deferred commencement condition at point B talks about the car stacker being deleted and replaced with a single hard stand car parking space. I'm assuming that's similar to what's happened in Tilbury Avenue to the east. Yet then point C talks about there being a garage. So that the recommendation before you is unclear and uncertain, and I would suggest is not able to be implemented. However, the main source of the objection relates to the pop-up office on proposed level 2 and the garage structure. That's the element that is blocking the views, causing the adverse impact and destroying the views of the land-water interface. Our consideration is that the assessment report hasn't appropriately considered the application against the assessment as required by Tenacity, and in particular, hasn't considered the reasonableness of the impact, particularly given the non-compliance with the side boundary setbacks, C3.2. However, the recommendation I suggest does possibly offer a solution. The deletion of the car stacker leaves a void below the car parking deck. There's already a light well incorporated into the design. The applicant could relocate the desired office accommodation into the void area created by the deletion of the car stacker, leaving the view clear, leaving the view of the roof of the existing dwelling as is, and as indicated in Council's initial assessment of the 10th of January, match the height of the structures and approvals at 11 Phoebe Street rather than the poor examples at 7. So I think that would
be a balance between the reasonableness of considering the extent of the impacts of the non-compliance with the side boundary setbacks and, I say, the assessment of the application against clause C310 of the DCP. It provides a balance between the views and desired accommodation for the applicant and also maintains in a far superior manner the views enjoyed by Phoebe Street and from Phoebe Street and from the roadway itself. I think I'll very quickly sum up.
Sorry, yeah. That's your 3 minutes.
Yeah. So I think there's a skillful time there and a solution that's offered by council's recommendation to relocate the offending element of the accommodation being the office into the void that would be created with the removal of the stacker. Thank you, Chair.
All right, and we do have your written submission, of course.
Yes, thank you.
Any questions from the panel?
No.
None?
No.
All right, now before I call on Mr. Mitchell, I'll try Mr. Jeremy Lawrence. Is Mr. Jeremy Lawrence there? No. All right, Mr. Mitchell. Do we have Mr. Mitchell?
Yeah.
Oh, we do have Mr. Mitchell. All right, over to you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're not being recorded. Turn on your mic.
All right.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, his mic is on, but your volume is quite low, Mr. Mitchell.
Okay, is that better? I've got it on.
That's a little bit better.
Okay. I'll speak up.
All right. Can you proceed?
Okay, great. Thank you, Chair. So I'd just like to say that the design as developed has been in very close collaboration with Council's assessing officer, Anna Walker. And as a result, with multiple iterations, we've got to a point where Council have recommended approval with conditions. And that, we think, is a fair outcome of the process that we've gone through. We do a lot of heritage work. We're very sympathetic to the conservation area aspects of this building. And as such, in Council's assessment report, it was viewed that the building's heritage significance is seen from the water and that it has very little impact from the street. Notwithstanding that, we have a couple of items that Council have recommended changes for, which we'd just like to talk to quickly. The impact of the proposed additions and the water opportunities and view losses have been viewed extensively. They've been closely examined, and as a result, we have enabled very good views from the street through to the water for the pedestrian realm. Council have requested in the deferred commencement conditions that we reduce the bulk of the garage form to a 3 metre by 6 metre rectangular form. This won't actually result in increased views to the water. And as such, we think that the revised plans that are before Council, we'd like the panel to view those in that light. We going to number two and number four, Phoebe Street, their concerns. We've done a lot of work in making sure that those views from all of the levels of their property are not adversely affected. There are minimal impacts of which we've shown in our assessment report. And I think we've got to a point where the form is representative of that. The third point being the car stacker. Council have requested that we delete this. The deletion of the car stacker will not result in any reduced bulk and scale. And Council have just said that it, from a point of view of functionally having to wait for people to come in and out is the only reason for refusing it. In a tight street, a reverse park is not dissimilar to the time we're sort of talking about. So we'd like the panel to review that. Finally, the last item, council requested that we remove the planter. We have a high level planter at the entry. This is just a really nice urban form element, that softens the street and we feel is very appropriate and thoughtful in the area. Thanks very much.
All right. Any questions from the panel?
Yes, I'd like to ask a question. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell, have you been onto the property at number two and observed the loss of view that will occur?
I have, yeah. We went there with our 3D consultant who carried out the view loss analysis. And so that view loss analysis is in this report.
And if you've come, as an architect, you've come to the view that the view loss is minimal?
I have, that's right. There are expansive views from every level and every point of that house. And so to deny us any opportunity of building anything, I don't think is reasonable. And the changes that we have made, we feel are responsible changes and do result in that minimal impact.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the panel?
No.
No?
No.
All right. Well, as with the other matters, what we will do is defer this matter to after the public meeting so that we can talk about it amongst ourselves and come to a decision. And we thank you all for your input. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And with that, we can then move on to item number 5. This is the proposed development in Orchard Street, Ashfield. It has been recommended for refusal. We have the planner and an architect for the applicant wishing to speak. Is Mr. Freeney here?
Yes, I am. Yep. Can you hear me? And no.
We can hear you, but not see you.
Oh, there we go. Can you see me now?
Now we can.
Right. So
you're aware that this is recommended for refusal. Yes. What do you have to say?
So I'm Fergus Freeney. I'm the town planner that represents the client, the applicant. I'd like to thank the panel for the opportunity to speak. We think it's unfortunate that the Architectural Excellence panel haven't looked favourably, but I'd just like to run through some of the positive elements of the scheme. So a key aspect of this proposal is that it retains the existing building on the site. This was constructed around 2007, so it's 13 years old, built to relatively modern standards and codes, and it's well within its expected lifespan. Both the ADG and DCP encourage the retention of existing buildings and the efficient use of resources and energy.
We might be on the wrong item.
I think we're right.
That's correct. Yeah.
Item number 5. We're on item number 5.
Orchard Crescent, Ashfield.
Yeah.
Sorry, my bad.
Yeah, so it's the retention of the lower building and additions above it. So the complete demolition, we think, and replacement of that building with would be inconsistent with the aims of the DCP and ADG. Three of the existing units will be enlarged with additional bedrooms and a balcony, and all of the existing units will have their balconies enlarged. The facades of the existing building will be upgraded to ensure consistency with the emerging and desired streetscape and the extension above. And the main entrance will be significantly enhanced to provide more visual presence on the streetscape, and to provide a safer, more secure and welcoming environment for the residents. And also general improvements to waste storage and other servicing. The proposal is consistent with the aims and objective of the NEP, ADG and DCP. There's a height door compliance, which it enables the bonus floor space to provide affordable housing. Which council, the officer has raised no issues with. In terms of the streetscape, we think the development provides a bookend at the northern end of Murrell Street, which echoes the bookend provided by the heritage item at the southern end of Murrell Street at the corner of Liverpool Road. And even similar window proportions and alignment are proposed. Similarly, so in terms of the other pattern of development on Murrell Street, the approved and proposed developments on Murrell Street, they have different treatments at lower level, which give a podium style appearance, which is replicated in our development with the existing building giving a podium style the design with the newer elements set back above. In terms of other matters, it's clear that the development is broadly acceptable to council. It's design and streetscape matters that have been raised, and the architect will discuss there in a bit more detail following. So yeah, just to finish up, we think it's important to recognise the other benefits of the scheme, which is it provides affordable housing, one unit of affordable housing, four additional units, which are generously sized, all of which have excellent solar access, cross ventilation, and large wraparound balconies. They're dual aspect apartments too. And development is consistent with the emerging and desired future streetscape pattern and character of the area. And it's compliant with or consistent with the aims and objectives of the AEP, DCP, and ADG requirements, and is therefore a building which is worthy of the panel's support. So, yes, thanks for giving the opportunity to speak.
Any questions from the panel?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
No questions?
No.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Richter, the architect, are you here? Mr. Richter?
Yes, I'm here.
Good. Oh, there you are.
Yeah.
We do have your written submission.
Yes.
And we've all had an opportunity to read it. So what do you want to say?
I'm happy to add a few things, if that's all right.
Yep.
Yes?
Yes, proceed.
Good. As a good afternoon, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Axel Richter, and I'm the architect for 1A Orchard Crescent in Ashfield. I have been practicing architecture for 28 years, both in Europe and Australia. And I have extensive experience in designing residential apartment buildings. Assessing the reasons leading to the recommendation for refusal, it becomes evident there is only one issue. The Architectural Excellence Panel disagrees with our decision to maintain the existing building at 1A Orchard Crescent and to integrate this building into our design. Whilst I respect your panel's opinion, however, I respectfully disagree for the following reasons. First, the building at 1A Orchard Crescent currently exists and forms part of the existing streetscape. Second, in respect to streetscape, we see the building at 1A Orchard Crescent marking the northern end of Murrell Street as the existing heritage building at 183 Liverpool Road and corner of Murrell Street marks the southern end of Murrell Street. Both buildings achieve this by having a length of wall on the lower floors built to the boundary. They share design features including external finish and window sizes. Whilst there are no requirements in the LEP and DCP for front setback, the upper floors of our proposal are set back 3 meters and are in line with the adjacent buildings. Third, our design achieves a building with a base, middle and top as required by the ADG and DCP. And please refer to the street elevation sheet lodged by our planning consultant for further details on that. Number four, our design approach of integrating the existing building into the new design is in accordance with ADG Part 4R. I quote, excerpt one, there are many benefits of retaining existing buildings, including sustainability, aesthetics, character, and valuing their social and cultural significance. And excerpt two, new building elements should be distinguishable from the original structure. Number five, the demolition would contradict performance criteria PC4 of Chapter A, miscellaneous resource, water, and energy and water efficiency of the Comprehensive Inter-Risk Control Plan 2016, as this would not be an efficient use of natural resources. And the delamination is also not economically viable. To us, as in summary, to us, it does not make any sense to demolish a good, well-constructed and solid building featuring great solar access, cross-ventilation and acoustic privacy. This is highly unsustainable and contradicts council policy as well as common sense. To refuse an application based on perceived aesthetic grounds when the proposal fully complies with all written and measurable controls, whilst not having any detrimental effects like overshadowing, privacy issues, loss of views, etc., on any neighbouring property would be, in my opinion, indefensible. We kindly ask you to consider favourably our argument and grant approval to the development. Thank you.
Any questions from the panel?
No.
No?
No.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As I said, we will defer our consideration of this till after the conclusion of the public meeting and publish our decision in due course. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next is item number 6, which is the proposed development at 139 Catherine Street, Leichhardt. Again, we have a number of speakers on this proposal, and I'll call each of you in turn. Is Lisa Campbell here? Lisa Campbell?
Yes, I am.
Liza Campbell?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, we see you and we hear you.
Hi there. Thanks for your time.
Your name and address for the record?
Yeah, sure. My name is Lisa Campbell and my address is 60 Star Street, Leichhardt.
All right, your 3 minutes starts now.
Thank you. We are the owners and residents of 60 Star Street and our property sits at the rear of the proposed development. The house we built is our forever home. We feel the size and proposed structure will greatly impact our current outlook and enjoyment of our home due to the overshadowing it will create and the privacy that will be breached. The assessing officer has stated that the privacy aspect has been satisfied in the revised plans. However, the view from the proposed entertaining balcony on level 3 and the bedroom on level 2 still have a direct uninterrupted view right into our master bedroom and courtyard. We would not have built our home in this location had we known a structure of this size would be allowed to be built in close proximity to an already overcrowded streetscape. Further, as detailed in our objection, we have significant concerns around the developer's stormwater proposal, given the additional roof structure water catchment. We know from our build that the proposed stormwater plan is inadequate and will add additional load to our courtyard as that this is the lowest point on our block. We are not opposed to the redevelopment of our neighbouring properties, but we wish to ensure that the significant investment we have made in our home and the consideration of our neighbours in our build is not adversely affected by an unreasonable proposal. To this point, we cannot support the multi-apartment development proposal as it is not in keeping with the neighbouring properties. We thank the panel for their time.
Any questions from the panel?
No.
No? All right, thank you very much. Is Donna Moran or Jason Coyle here? Mr. Coyle? No?
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I see someone trying to unmute their microphone. One second.
Sorry.
All right, who do we have?
My name is Donna Moran. I live in the building next to 139. So I'm 137 Catherine Street. So I live and I have a business in the property.
All right. Your 3 minutes starts now.
Thank you. I have concerns that the safety risks involved in such an extensive development of a property of this age have not been addressed in the proposal. The structural report states that works have been reviewed to ensure that the existing structure, excluding the party wall, is sufficient to support the new works. The integrity of our party wall cannot be excluded from this review. It will absolutely be burdened by the demolition, excavation and attachment of the proposed new floor structures. The statement that the existing structure is sufficient has no basis in fact, with no noise and vibration reports to support the statement. With regard to parking, the developer Fifth Grade's proposal states the site was last occupied by a retail premise and a single dwelling house with nil on-site parking provision. This is wholly inaccurate, as there are currently two parking spaces on-site, evidence of which has been provided in our previously submitted objections. It has, over the previous two sales of the premises, been marketed as a property with two on-site parking spots. If the development goes ahead, the provision for car access across the easement for residents of 139 would be gone, resulting in a loss of amenity for future tenants. Their access to the property would be on foot only, which would be wholly unworkable. I also have concerns about the integrity of the data supplied in the application. The data supplied to date has been incorrect, incomplete, or misrepresented, as can be seen from our original submitted objection. Shade diagrams submitted in the initial proposal were incorrect, but were placed. They were incorrect, but were placed on us to present the true representation of the site, which we have done by having a surveyor measure and mark existing windows accurately. This showed huge errors on their submitted diagrams. The sheer bulk and scale of the proposed development conflicts with the amenity of the area and will negatively impact the amenity of all neighbouring properties. This cannot be offset by broader issues associated with community benefit because there are none. We will have loss of access to our property during the development. We will have loss of solar access directly and indirectly. The increase in height of the building and the proximity being moved closer to the boundary are not considered in the proposal, nor is the loss of our ability to passively heat our home. Noise pollution for the duration of the development, specifically during the demolition and excavation, will absolutely result in the closure of my physiotherapy practice, a business which I've spent 7 years building. This would massively impact on our quality of life and would lead to a cessation of a medical service for the local community, again impacting on public amenity. Whilst the developer has stated my loss of business is not a consideration in the development, I would ask that this is taken into consideration in the panel's deliberations. The potential for noise and odour pollution would be greatly increased after the development, allowing motorbikes to be driven up the enclosed passageway at the side of our living accommodation. Fumes and noise would penetrate and interfere with the quality of our everyday life and the running of our physio practice, should we still be practicing. Thanks for your consideration.
Right. Any questions from the panel?
Yes, I have a question. Miss Moran, is it?
Yes.
I just didn't understand why you'd have to close your physio business. I missed the first few words.
Yep, okay. So basically, this is the party wall behind me. If I was to knock aggressively on that, you would hear it. Because of the scale and bulk of the development they're suggesting, they are completely demolishing from the front of my practice back. So they would have to demolish the building and excavate with vibration and noise. We would hear everything. There's no way we could treat patients in the practice. We would just have to close the practice or move the practice, which we physically couldn't afford to do. So there's no way to be able to work. There's no buffer of sound. All the other developments in this row have been done within the building. They have not completely demolished the building. So there's no way to buffer the sound. Our party wall is here with them, and they would be working on it solidly.
And are you to the south or the north?
Our building is to the south.
To the south. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the panel?
No.
If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Is Matthew or Amanda Jane Foglia here?
We are, thank you.
We see you and we hear you. All right. For the record, your name and address?
Sure. My name is Amanda Jane or AJ Foglia. I'm here with my husband, Matthew. We reside in 133 Catherine Street, Leichhardt.
All right. Your 3 minutes starts now.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to appear before the panel. As a general matter, we would welcome a renovation of the premises. There are aspects of the proposed works, particularly those works to restore the grandeur of the heritage-listed facade, that we would support. That being said, we do support the comprehensive objection from the Inner West Council. Our objections relate to the proposed
alterations and additions to the rear of the premises. While we would support reasonable alterations to the rear of the premises, for the reasons I will summarise, we consider that the proposed works are not reasonable. Our concerns about the proposed DA are detailed in length in our objection, dated the 16th of April 2020. However, for the purposes of today's review, our concerns are summarised to the following 5 points. Number one, concerns about the accuracy of the factual information represented in the application which informs the DA. The factual information presented in the DA is in a number of ways inaccurate and or materially misleading on critically important issues, which are then relied upon by the applicant as a basis for submitting that the application should be approved. Two, the dual occupancy nature of the proposed alterations to the premises, which has implication in terms of A, bulk and scale, B, the intensity of the use of the easement across our property to access the proposed dual occupancy premises from Thorby Avenue, both during and after construction, and C, parking on Thorby Avenue. Number three, concerns about the stormwater design, which contemplates stormwater draining along the easement across our property to the curb at Thorby Avenue. A, the stormwater drainage to Thorby Avenue runs along the length of the easement, which runs across the rear of our property. B, we are concerned that there may be insufficient fall, as much of the run from the premises to Thorby Avenue is, at least in accordance with our observation, uphill, not downhill. And C, we expect that the installation of a stormwater pipe, assuming that is, of course, feasible, along the easement across our property would require our consent. And unless our concerns about the proposed development are satisfactorily resolved, we would not consent to propose stormwater works along the easement. Number four, concerns about the impacts of the development of this bulk and scale. A, the footprint of the proposed development is far larger than that of all of the other buildings that comprise the Thorby buildings. B, not only is the bulk and scale out of character, but it's different character as a dual occupancy building with a materially larger residential capacity will have adverse impacts on the neighbouring properties, including, among other things, a significant increase in the intensity of use of the easement, a significant increase for the demand for car parking on Thorby Avenue, which is already scarce. C, impact on solar access and privacy. And D, concerns for safety for children who frequent the laneway and who are residents of the laneway. Number five, finally and most importantly, we would be devastated if the look, feel, function and livability of our property was subsequently dishonoured and dramatically altered by a development application that seeks to unilaterally change the look, feel and function of the Thorby building residences and surroundings. The DA fails to reasonably consider the impacts to neighbouring properties and those who have built a life and a home in its precinct. We thank the panel for its consideration of our objectives. Our objections. Thank you.
Right. Any questions from the panel?
No.
No questions. Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now then, Mr. Shi, is Mr. Shi here? Luke Shi? If not?
I am here, Chairman, but I'm not registered to speak. I'm the applicant, but I'm just viewing at the moment.
You're just here to listen.
Yeah, correct.
All right. Mr. Lombardo.
Good afternoon, Chairman.
Yes.
Let's see if I can get this started. Good afternoon, Chairman. Good afternoon, everybody.
Yes. All right. You're the architect?
Yes. Unregistered, yes.
Yes. All right. You proceed.
I'm not here so much to have a statement, but more to answer the panel's questions, if they have any specific questions about the design, the ergonomics and the use of the building.
Panel, any questions?
I've got a question. Mr. Lombardo, is it true that the property was used for parking previously?
I'm not sure what was used beforehand. I do know that the marketing plan did show car spaces. Whether or not they were legally approved car spaces, I can't answer that. But in terms of the marketing, it did show them how they would come in and out and be compliant. I can't see that. I can't see how that would work. But yeah, unfortunately, I haven't got a straightforward answer for you there.
Thank you. And in relation to the stormwater, is this application reliant upon getting a stormwater drainage through the what is presently a right of way?
There would be two options. We could either go through one of the neighbouring properties or through the right of way, yes, which I believe has existing use rights, but I'm not sure, as I'm not the stormwater engineer.
You're saying there are existing use rights for stormwater drainage for this property through the right of way?
I believe so, but again, I'm not the stormwater engineer, so I'm not 100% sure.
What happens to the stormwater now?
From what I can tell, it currently goes through through the right of way, I believe. But I'm not 100% sure.
All right. Any other questions of Mr.
Sorry to interrupt, David, but we can actually absolutely confirm that it doesn't. Our property was built 5.5 years ago, and we had to go through extensive revisions to get a stormwater plan approved on this block. And we know point blank that it's not possible to run stormwater down that back lane because there's not enough fall, but also you would need to get the approval. There is a right of way that exists behind every single terrace on Thorby, of the Thorby buildings, and you would not be able to get a stormwater running down that path.
Do you know what happens now with the stormwater?
I know our property runs out to Style Street. We had to build provisions under our house to make sure the stormwater drains out to Style Street because we couldn't get the access to work down the lane running to Thorby.
Yeah.
But do you know what happens with the stormwater from the subject property now?
Currently, it runs into our property. Currently, all of the stormwater along those terraces on Thorby Avenue run directly into our property, which is why we were essentially made to elevate our house to run stormwater drainage underneath our property to accommodate the flow of water that comes from those properties. So,
and is there an easement to allowing that to happen?
No.
There's not an easement on our property for that, no.
I wonder if Mr. Mead knows the answer to the stormwater for this development.
Yes, thank you for the question. I didn't announce myself because I hadn't been invited to speak yet, but I'm the consultant planner for the applicant. In terms of the drainage, there is currently no easement and the drainage is currently not dealt with in a formal manner, much like many of the low density dwellings in the location. You'll note that in the recommended conditions of consent were the panel to approve the development, that the deferred commencement condition number one requires that drainage be dealt with through the obtaining of a legal right, being in the form of an easement. So we accept that is the requirement. As the panel will be aware, it's not an unusual condition of consent, if all other matters are resolved, that drainage be dealt with in that way, in that obviously the Conveyancing Act gives the power to obtain that easement if it can't be achieved through a civil arrangement.
All right. Any other questions about the stormwater? All right. Any other questions to Mr. Lombardo? No? All right. Well, you're on the screen, Mr. Mead.
Yes, I've got our heritage consultant, Mr. Kovaj, here as well. We were going to have him speak first in that the heritage matters are the most significant matters raised in the assessment report, and then we'll come back to the town planning matters if that's suitable to the panel.
That's all right. Mr. Kovaj?
Members of the panel, can you see and hear me?
We can.
Oh, good. Okay, excellent. Look, I promise not to test your patience. My name is Zoltan Kovacs. I live at 42 Starling Street, Lilyfield, which is just around the corner from this property, and I drive past the place virtually every day. I've been there for 27 years. I'm an architect with 30 years' experience in heritage conservation, and I have worked as Woollahra Council's heritage officer for 7 years. I'd just like to thank you for this opportunity to put my case, which disagrees with Council's heritage assessment about the heritage impact that relates to the rear of the property. I've actually submitted some late correspondence, which I hope you received. Have you received this diagram?
No, I have not. When did you submit it?
Oh, last week through Mr. Sheedy. I've had a discussion with Ms. McGregor and apparently it was distributed to the panel.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, it was part of the package.
Yeah, I'll just hold it up again just in case, because it explains some of the issues that relates to the integrity of the building.
Yes, proceed.
Okay, so the first thing I'd like to say is that I have no disagreement with Council on the significance of the Thorby buildings. I actually think it's one of the most important early commercial developments in the area. It's the principal building form, which is on this particular diagram, is represented by green, which I don't know if you can see. I don't think we'll be able to do a screen share. Yeah,
we can see that.
Yeah, terrific. That's the principal form of the building. That's highly intact. It's highly legible. And it's almost a landmark. I consider it a very special building. There aren't many buildings like that within the municipality. The fact that it stretches between Stroke Street and Thorby Avenue also particularly reinforces its streetscape character. And it's the external appearance of that building is very impactful, and I consider it a very significant building. Now, I can't say the same for the back of the building. And from the diagram, you can probably see that the rear has actually changed quite significantly. And the first thing that I'd like to point out to you is that in Council's heritage report, the heritage officer referred to the rear as some appear to have little changed. Well, that's completely wrong. And if he had visited the site, which I believe that he hadn't, he would realise that every single building within that group has been through significant change. Now, I lived in that area, as I said, for 27 years, and I've seen how much change these buildings are subject to. And over the years, the way Council managed the rear extensions is that it allowed virtual demolition. Is my 3 minutes almost up? Okay, I'll be very quick. What I would just like to also add that if, apart putting aside the integrity of the rear extensions are not that significant, because they are just ordinary commonplace residential extensions which do not really relate or contribute in any way to the significance of the principal build form, which is also, if you read the statement of significance to the building, that's conveyed in that. And I see no reason why the rear extension could not be demolished and replaced with the proposed form, because there is no loss to the actual significance and cultural value of the buildings. Thank you.
Any questions from the panel?
Yeah, can I just say something?
Who's speaking?
Lucky. I just want to say, shake that Laffy Taffy, girl. Bring it back and work it, girl. Bring it back and drop it, girl. Shake that Laffy Taffy.
Can you just quiet that one, Tina?
Yes. It's not quite the question I expected, Mr. Chair.
May I ask a question, please, Chair?
Sure.
Mr. Kovacs, is it correct that some of the material that you are demolishing is actually part of the original building at the rear?
The party wall is, and some of the internal walls would be part of the original fabric.
And that includes floors as well?
Yes, some of the floors as well, yes.
Yeah. Why was it necessary to do that?
Look, that's for the architect to answer, but what I'm saying is that those particular elements in this case, because of the loss of integrity, do not really contribute to what's significant about this building group.
What was the loss of integrity about those rooms at the rear?
Well, there's been, I don't know if you've got a copy of that diagram, the back of the building's been...
That diagram, but as you know, I've been to the site.
Yeah, that's right. The rear extension has been altered. That single-storey bit at the back is not original. They post-date 1940. They look as if they were original, but they're not. The rear room on the upper level has been altered and changed. So there's been quite a degree of change.
So, thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions from the panel?
No.
Thank you.
One. All right. Now, Mr. Mead.
Thank you. I'll just deal with the town planning issues that are raised in the report. As I said earlier, the heritage matters are obviously the most significant matters. I just wanted to make very clear to the panel a couple of things in response to the assessment report. Firstly, by way of background, as Mr. Kovacs just mentioned, there has been significant alterations to a number of the properties along Catherine Street. And despite the report talking about two development consents that have been issued in that regard, a very quick search found another five development consents in recent years for changes to the rear of these properties. So in our view, it's a little bit disingenuous to suggest that there's only a couple of applications for these types of things. To turn to the FSR control and its operation, just wanted to make very clear to the panel how the FSR control actually applies here. The base control is one-to-one. However, clause 4.4A has an FSR of 1.5 to 1 that applies if certain criteria is met. Now, those criteria are dealt with in the staff report. The first one is that the proposal provides an active frontage, which staff agree that we do. The second criteria is that the proposal comprises mixed-use development, which we do. And the third criteria is that the proposal is compatible with the desired future character. So in our view, the first two preconditions are clearly met. That's factual. And the consideration is about whether the proposal is compatible with the desired future character. The staff report then goes on to look at the desired future character against the statement in Council's DCP. There's nothing short of 18 performance controls under the heading of desired future character in the DCP. And the assessment report deals with only one, being C2, as a problem. C2 goes to heritage concerns. So again, subject to the panel being satisfied with the heritage aspects, that 1.5 to 1 FSR is available to the applicant, and it's not correct to say that then a clause 4.6 variation is required. I'm just putting that to the panel in the sense that there's no jurisdictional impediment to granting a consent. In terms of the FSR of the proposal, the FSR is 1.2 to 1, so it's some 20% less than the maximum FSR. And that's important in terms of the commentary in the report about bulk and scale. As the panel will well know, considerations of bulk and scale must be undertaken against the backdrop of the planning controls that apply. When doing that, the proposal is compliant with the FSR control. The staff report raises no issue with side setbacks nor the rear setback, and in fact agrees that privacy and solar access shadowing impacts are acceptable. So in our view, when you place bulk and scale considerations against that backdrop, staff are in agreement that the proposal is acceptable. The last issue I'll deal with very quickly relates to car parking. In terms of the car parking that the neighbours may be referring to on the site, the rear of the site has been used informally for car parking, but there's never been an approval for car parking on the site, and that's because the manoeuvring of those spaces is so unsatisfactory that council would not approve those. So in doing the parking calculation, the staff report arrives at the conclusion that there's a shortfall of one space. That must be considered against the backdrop of the objectives of council's parking controls, which go to minimising use of cars, looking at alternative modes of transport, and considering minimum parking rather than maximum parking, which is different to other parts of Sydney. So in terms of car parking, we're talking about one car space. In our view, that would not be fatal to the application. So just in closing, we would seek that the deferred commencement conditions of consent would be imposed, which require the obtaining of an easement for drainage, as well as some other considerations in relation to legal rights of access and so on along the lane. In terms of the issues raised by objectors that went to construction impacts, they would be dealt with by the typical construction conditions that are put forward. And in terms of dilapidation and structural issues, there is conditions that are recommended again at, I think, condition 15, 14 and 15, which go to dilapidation matters. So again, I would say that the structural impacts are dealt with in the typical way with adjoining properties. My 3 minutes is up, which went very quickly, but I'd be very happy to answer any questions that may arise.
Can I just ask one? Just in terms of the intensity of the development to allow for two dwellings as opposed to even one, that would then cancel out the deficiency of one space, would it not?
Yes, it would reduce the parking requirement, yes.
And I suppose the other thing is also, in terms of the frontage, well, the access to the unit from the rear, as I understand it.
Yes, the access to the residential.
That's not normally a desirable outcome.
There's the access point from the rear. There's also an internal access from the commercial tenancy. So it would depend on, there's obviously the opportunity for this to be a live work arrangement whereby that access is also available.
If that was for just one residence, yes.
Yes, yes. In terms of the access, yes, you're right, the access from the rear, which again is given the objectives of the controls that are encouraging the active frontages and those retail and commercial spaces at the street, there's not too many alternatives to that when you're dealing with a heritage facade.
And the bridge, I mean, I'm just looking at the fact you've got a three-storey development at the rear and the necessity for it.
Well, I'm not sure that we need to demonstrate the necessity for it to the panel, but in terms of the planning controls and its performance against those, as I said, the FSR of
So, Jeff, you say that there's 20% under in FSR, but the council's report says 20% over, I thought.
Yes, and that's why I took my time to explain the operation of the controls. The council is suggesting that the proposal is subject to a 1-to-1 FSR control. They are saying that clause 4.4A is not invoked because part C of that precondition is not met, which essentially says that a proposal must be compatible with the desired future character to benefit from the 1.5-to-1 FSR. Our position is that we are compatible with the desired future character, and therefore clause 4.4A is invoked. And so that's the conflict between there and our appreciation of what the FSR
complies with. So that's in the opinion of the consent authority at the end of the day.
Correct.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Yep. I was just. Yep. Thanks. Great.
Any other questions? If not, thank you very much, Mr. Mead.
Thank you.
All right. And as with the other matters, we will defer consideration of this until after the conclusion of the public meeting, which means that we can move on to item number 7, which is the proposed development at 328 to 336 Liverpool Road, Ashfield. We have three representatives of the applicant here, I believe. I think we have three representatives of the applicant. This has been recommended for approval. Does anyone on behalf of the applicant wish to speak against that recommendation? Are you all happy with the proposed conditions?
It's Philip North here, Chair.
Are you happy with the recommendation and the proposed conditions?
Yes, we have no issue with, we're certainly happy with the recommendation and we have no issue with the proposed conditions.
So are you happy if we adopt the recommendation?
Absolutely. And I'm certainly available to answer any questions.
I can indicate that that is the view of the panel.
We appreciate that.
And a formal decision to that effect will be issued in due course.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. So with that, we move on to item number 8, 14 Forest Road, Haberfield. Is Mr. Alvaro here? Anyone here, Mr. Alvaro, for 14 Forest Road, Haberfield? I'm surprised that Mr. Alvaro is not here.
Perhaps Tina might call him.
Hmm?
No, he's here.
I think I see someone waving.
He's here. Can you turn his mic on?
Dom.
It's Dom. D-O-M.
Is that you? Yes. Yep. Okay. You're not muted, so there must be an issue with your microphone on your end. No, still can't hear you.
Oh, we can see you, but we can't hear you.
Dominic, do you want me to see if I can try and dial you in? Sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if there's anyone else registered to speak on that item just while I'm trying to find his details. I don't know if you want to deal with something else.
No, there's no
one. Go on to 9.
There's no one else registered to speak, only Mr. Alvaro. And we need to talk to him.
Yep.
He's both the owner and the architect.
Yes.
Yes, he's telling you to dial in, I think, Tina. Thanks.
Mr. Alvaro, can you hear us? You can. Well, let me tell you what we think. And you can either nod or shake your head as to whether you agree with it. You have recently submitted amended A4 updated plans, which we have. But these plans have not yet been the subject of an assessment report by the council. That is one of the problems that we have. It also means that not only do we have to defer it for that reason to obtain an updated assessment report, but it will be necessary for you to prepare an updated clause 4.6 objection because you have changed the landscaping configuration and the depth of excavation. What we propose is this. You may or may not agree with this. What we propose is that we allow you till the end of this week, namely the 11th of September, to formally submit amended plans to the council, together with an updated or amended clause 4.6 objection. If you do that, then the amended plans can be the subject of a report to the next panel meeting next month. Can you do that? That's an acknowledgement.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I've tried and I'm not actually able to add him into the meeting.
Well, that's all right. He can hear us and he has acknowledged what I've just said. So if you're prepared to do that, we're prepared to adjourn it, defer it on that basis. That's okay? He says yes. All right, panel, all agreed?
Can we give him a time period, David, that we think is appropriate? Am I on mute? I am.
No. I've said end of this week, the 11th of September.
Oh, end of this week. Sorry, I'm terribly sorry. Yes, yep.
Yes, that's what I've said. And Mr. Alvaro nods his head. All right. Okay, all agreed? Then that's yes. The decision. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Alvaro. So we move on to item number 9. Item number 9 is the, I'll just get the other folder, is the development somewhere. Yes, 175 Johnston Street, Annandale. These are ground and first floor additions to an existing dwelling. The recommendation is for approval, but we have Alice Sun. I think is Alice Sun available?
Yes, hi. I am the owner and applicant, but I am not registered to speak.
No. Do you agree with the recommendation to approve?
Yes.
Do you agree with the conditions that are proposed?
Yes.
Are there any questions of Ms. Sun?
No.
No. I'm asking the panel members if
they have any
questions for you.
This is the one where we asked for the toilet.
Yeah.
As a condition, would you like to comment on that, please?
Miss Sun has not been privy to this discussion.
No. What I'm asking is, if he agrees with all the conditions. I just need to understand if that. And one of the conditions is, which I'm just taking you to, about deleting that upstairs toilet, as I understand it.
Relocating, I think.
Yes, the design change condition.
Yes, so I think the design change condition is that we move the bathroom back.
Yes.
Yes, and we agree with those conditions.
Okay, you agree with that condition. Thank you, that was all I wanted. Thank you.
Anything else from the panel?
No. Yes.
All right, Ms. Sun, you will get your consent in due course.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Item number 10. Item number 10 is 61 Louisa Road, Birchgrove. All right, we have a number of speakers here. Is Peter Dewden here?
Turn your mic on. Mike.
Mr. Jordan.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Are you Mr. Jordan?
Well, I am.
Oh, good. We can see you and we can hear you.
This is...
wonderful. Wonderful technology. I don't know if you were here at the start of the meeting, but the protocol governing these meetings allows members of the public to address the panel for up to 3 minutes.
Thank you.
The ball's in your court.
I'm Peter Dewden. This is my wife, Lou Dewden. We've been residents here at 63 Louisa Road, which is next door to the property under discussion, for over 40 years. And during that time, of course, we've seen many applications of new people coming into the area, all with the same desires to have car parks and also to extend the rear of their properties towards Birchgrove Park. And throughout this time, council has been very vigilant in trying to maintain what's a well-established building line. In my submission to the review, which you may have, I've actually enclosed some photographs which show quite clearly that within this neighbouring area, the neighbouring properties, 55 to 63 Louisa Road, no second, first floor developments go beyond the building line. The proposal, which we certainly object to, is proposing to go forward by 2.5 metres from this line. The property also aims to modify what has been a heritage building with a very elaborate wrought iron balcony. This will all be knocked off and a building constructed towards our building line, so only 900 millimetres from our building line, which will then extend further forward by another 2.5 metres. What this is going to do is it will have significant loss of light into our bedroom on the first floor, and then on the ground floor will place us into a tunnel where not only will light be removed, but we'll be just looking in a straightforward position. Sorry.
Yes, proceed.
A lot of the argument within the documentation is based on a totally misrepresentation of this building line. The architects have constructed some line based upon houses much further away towards the tennis courts on Louisa Road. And the line here seems to take up some ground floor patio areas, ground floor extensions, and then even a first floor extension. So it's totally unrepresentative of what the actual building line is in the area, is in the neighbouring properties. The other major objection is, of course, to car parking, where there is a request to convert public parking for private use. And I think there's a couple of significant things here within the photographs which are provided to you on page 640 of your documentations. And here it suggests that other houses have done similar things. Well, it might be the case that they have, but they're all on the side of the road where no parking is permitted, which means, of course, that they have not removed public parking for private use. There's also another statement on that page which says that our dwelling, number 63, is a freestanding dwelling of similar age to the subject dwelling. The dwelling has had significant facade alterations. I can assure you that there have been no alterations to the facade at all. And we've been here for, as I say, 44 years. So thanks very much.
Any questions from the panel?
Yes.
No? All right. Mr. Kane.
Yes, can you hear me?
We can, and we can see you.
Thank you, Chair. So I'm the owner with my wife of number 59 Louisa Road, and my specific concern relates to item 1E, which is the proposed extension of the building alignment for level 1 and the setback. We went through council process about 10 years ago when we built this property. And my ask of the panel is threefold, to ensure that the panel has cited the extensive council notes that council made for this property some 10 years ago. The second issue, which I'd like to understand myself, is they recently proposed the addition of a second balcony on top of the existing balcony on level one, without any explanation. And thirdly, I asked the panel to consider the implication of any extension on a building alignment for basically all of the properties that face Birchgrove Oval. Thank you.
Any questions on the panel?
No.
If not, no. Thank you, Mr. Kane. All right. Is Mr. McKee here?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
All right. We have your written request of the 4th of September.
Thank you.
and we have read it.
Great. So if the panel members can just take out the plan that's behind, I'll be referring to the to that in particular. But what I would like to do is something that maybe is unusual, but I'm going to, in accordance with my instructions, do that. In short, because of COVID, because of a number of, you know, difficulties that everyone's dealing with, despite our request to meet with council, we've not been able to have any meeting. It was suggested that we would meet when they came out to actually inspect the property. No such inspection took place, and so no such meeting. But we need to move on from these difficulties, because ultimately what we need to do is try and get an approval, which is obviously what all people are doing in relation to this panel. So I'm instructed to abandon, to address the streetscape issues, this review application is to abandon the car park in the front yard, to address the streetscape issues. So I'm going to ask the panel to amend the application to remove that, or by condition, as was done with the original approval, to that my client will no longer pursue that particular element. Now, in relation to the rear BLZ, which is what the neighbours have focused on, and indeed what the report has focused on, that is the area which we are seeking to have approved. Now, again, I have instructions. At the moment, the approval that was issued by council back in April saw the constraint being that the eastern facade, the eastern facade be set at a certain level. Now, there's been, in the report to the panel, there's been discussions around the size of the bedroom. Now, currently, the approval given saw 1.57 metres be taken out of the bedroom. Now, what I've got instructions to put to the council is that if we take out the 570 millimetres, so there be a condition requiring 570 millimetres to be taken out of the actual bedroom. So the balcony stays the same, the double doors onto the balcony stay the same, but the actual internal space be removed. Now, if I can just briefly take you to the BLZ plan, you will see, and there is a the council's controls, which you're familiar with, state where an adjoining development, this is the DCP control, where an adjoining development has a front or rear setback that is clearly uncharacteristic of the general pattern of development within the street. Consideration will be given to the general pattern in determining whether to permit a variation to the BLZ, rather than determining it purely on the adjoining buildings alone. Now, this matter was addressed in the report, but this plan demonstrates that the average second story setback for the majority of these particular...
You continue, please.
The majority of these, and the purple line demonstrates this. The green on this plan identifies what the application is seeking. So we're content to get an approval so we can start doing these renovations for my client, to pull that back a further amount. Currently, there is a veranda, which you've seen in the photographs, which are at the rear of the report, which is open and there's the ability to overlook. Where you have a panoramic view of the city, you can't necessarily accept the same level of privacy that you would and might do in other circumstances. So in relation to the impact on number 63 Louisa Avenue, we would say that you can see the number of lines that are on this plan, which indicate a number of interpretations of where the BLZ would go because of number 65, and its very forward position. So in essence, I'm putting to the panel to say that if you look at the purple line and you look at where the proposed development is, that it is a reasonable interpretation. It's a reasonable position for my client to put through me and through the architect to say that coming forward, in the circumstances is reasonable. So I ask the panel to consider that. One other correction, page 60, which I put in my letter, but I think it's page 609, talks about solar panels and overshadowing of solar panels. The report has a photograph which is circled. Please don't be misled. As I said in my letter, and if we go to the DCP, so the DCP actually says at C7, in relation to solar access, that proposals for new development are to maintain solar access to existing solar collectors. That is a photovoltaic cell. It is not a pool heating device which is used to extend the hours of the pool. So, and particularly the DCP goes on to say, having regard to performance, efficiency, economic viability, and reasonableness of their location, it is a furphy. It is a red herring because the existing building actually shadows the very solar heating system that the council has relied on to say that, you know, to bolster its BLZ argument. So they're not solar collectors. They're not for electricity generation. They are for pool heating. And we believe the DCP makes a distinction in that regard. There are the submissions I make. Mr. Chairman, thank you for letting me speak on and address those matters. But they were the matters which we wanted to try to get an approval out of this process because, you know, the processes of appeals, et cetera, are, you know, we're out to February or March and we just don't want to go there.
A question. Would you look at the plan on page 599 of the assessment report?
599? 599. Yes, I'm there.
And you'll see a line marked XX across the floor plan.
Yes,
that
I've seen
the line. That is the line, I understand it, which the council wants you to keep behind.
Yep.
That's correct?
That is the line that council have nominated as the area that they say that the whole building should be behind, but not the balcony.
All right.
So they're basically taking out 1.57 metres, the approval, and then the balcony can come back and be to the east of that so-called line. Yep.
So let me understand what your proposal is. You still want to come forward of that line?
By 1 metre.
By 1 metre.
Not 1.57 metres, right? Up by 1 metre.
That's ridiculous.
Now,
I strongly object to that.
Well,
I didn't talk through your presentation, sir.
Well, the panel wants to understand what Mr. McKee's proposal is. Do other panel members have any questions?
No.
All right, we understand that. All right.
Very sorry, Chair. I was muted. I just wanted to pursue the 1.57 metres you're prepared to bring back to the 1 metre.
Yes.
And when I look at that floor area, it is very generous, Mr. McKee. Is there not some opportunity to pull that back further?
What I would say, nice to see you again. What I would simply say is that I'm looking at the purple line and I'm saying that in accordance with council's controls, the rear BLZ that would be reasonable is that line. I'm then looking at the green line and saying we're already set back approximately 2 metres from that purple line. And then I'm saying that...
What page is your purple line on?
It's on the presentation or the letter from my firm. And there is,
I've got your letter, yes.
Okay, and there is a plan attached to it.
No, okay, that's all right.
Sorry, panel members. That plan actually came from Andrew. I can't pronounce his. That's the one. So it's a separate attachment.
Yes.
A separate attachment.
DA34. It's plan DA34, which David had.
Okay. Rightio, just so I get the facts. And then DA34, all right then.
Okay. So what that plan shows is that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of the dwellings along Louisa Avenue have a two-story, you know, rear building line, and it's only the ones directly next to us which are back. And so,
totally untrue.
Well,
this is not an open forum. Thank you.
No, at the present moment we are trying to understand what Mr. McKee's submission is. Ms. Morrell, do you have any further questions?
And I suppose then the other question is then there's no additional setback for that upper level there for the bedroom from the side boundaries.
No, that's correct. There is not.
And the depth of that balcony off the bedroom?
Is 1.4. Sorry, Andrew, what is it? 1.4?
1,200 millimetres.
1,200.
One of the conditions of the deferred commencement, DA, was to reduce that down to 1.2.
Yes.
And we reduced it from 2.4 to 1.2.
Yes.
And we also added the privacy screens, which was another deferred commencement condition, condition G, of having privacy screens either side. So we've blinkered whatever outlook there is from the bedroom and the balcony. Because, you know, looking that way, there's a fantastic view of the city, and that's what people pay a premium to live there for. Mm-hmm. So we have protected the privacy on either property. And should point out there is a big wraparound balcony already on the existing building, so there is a sort of degree of compromised privacy anyway that exists. And you have that with all those properties that face Birchgrove Oval.
If I may suggest the panel, there's a photo on page 637 of the panel report which gives you that vista, and it shows how from that first floor level you look out over towards the park and towards the city, you know, rather than down to the mountains.
Right, okay. Not here. Now, can I, while the architect's here, would there be any improvement in terms of amenity of adjoining neighbours if that upper bedroom was set in?
I wouldn't. No, not really, because, I mean, they're on the north of...
Actually, that's not my question. My question is it capable of being set in off further off the boundaries, that portion?
Well, I have to confer with my client on that one. I mean...
No, I'm asking in an architectural sense.
No, we assess that.
Thank you. Right here.
Yep. Can I point out that we are way under the permissible floor space ratio?
Okay, maybe Andrew, if I can just chime in there. This is why my letter sought a deferral. We just want to have a meeting for half an hour with the relevant council officers, and if we can pull that wall off the boundary, set it in, say half a metre, and achieve the length that we're looking for, because that will assist in the neighbour to 63, then that's, I mean, I'm just saying, that's why we feel as though we've just had no opportunity to actually engage in a discussion, and then it being a review application, it's, you know, that's what we're seeking.
Mr. McKee, there is no point in seeking a deferral because the next panel meeting isn't until the 13th of October, which takes it outside the period within which a review can be determined.
I understand that. I wasn't sure whether, potentially, like other panels, there can be a deferral and an agreement that it be dealt with by email. In other situations that has occurred. But I totally acknowledge the position that the panel's in, and I respect that.
I think we have to decide it today.
And our client, Prue, is online, and, you know, the question is, you know, if we had to pull that wall back half a metre, would you accept that? Would that be an acceptable outcome?
Well, I can't answer that question. We have to
No.
I think Mr. Inglis is asking his client.
So this is pulling back the line at the back, Andrew, or on the sides? We'd be willing to pull back on the sides if we get the length that we've discussed.
Okay. All right.
All right. Are there any other questions? Side. Any other questions?
No.
Thank you.
No. All right. Well, as with the other matters, we will defer consideration until after the public meeting and publish our determination in due course. And thank you all for your input.
Thank you.
All right. So we can now move on to item number 11. This is another application for an adjournment. Do we have Mr. Richter here?
No.
Yes.
Item number 11. We've got, first of all, we've got Nadia Colossi. Is Nadia Colossi here?
Yes, I'm here.
Ah, good. We see you and hear you. Your name and address, please.
It's Nadia Colossi, 64 Alfred Street, Annandale. So I'm the neighbour.
All right, you proceed.
Okay. I guess I've submitted something to the panel, which I'm assuming that you've all read through, so I'm not going to read through that. I guess I just wanted to talk through my concerns with the proposed studio, and essentially it comes down to privacy and amenity. So when looking at the plans, and I don't know if you have the plans in front of you, but if you look at page 28 of the plans, you can see the stairwell that goes up to the upper level, and there's obviously a landing and doors and windows there. And my concern with those stairs and the way that it's orientated is it looks directly into my backyard and also directly into my living room. So I have serious concerns with regard to the impact that the studio, the way it's currently designed, will actually have on our privacy, that of myself and my family. I also have concerns with regard to, I guess, my amenity in terms of the bulk and scale. So there's just coming out of my back door, like within a metre, there's a very significant wall. I think it's over 3 metres, I'm not sure. Which goes along the side of my yard. And I guess really my concern is that's just going to create this feeling of me being completely boxed in. So there's no setback proposed. I'll be losing my sort of vista of the trees. And to me, it's like it's going to be a bit suffocating, basically, if I'm in the backyard. Additionally, from my living room windows, all I will see is that wall. So I guess that's in a nutshell. There's other concerns, but they're my two key ones.
All right, thank you. Any questions from the panel?
Yes, I'd like to ask a question. Mrs. Colossi, those trees at the rear of this property, I think they're eucalypts. You would see them very clearly from your property, wouldn't you? They're very tall.
Yes.
And is that the view of trees that you're wishing to retain?
I can see them certainly when I look up, but I guess it's the way that they're sort of, it's those trees, it's also in the neighbouring yard. So the neighbours on the other side of 62, they also have a tree. And there's also some further trees up. So it's that whole sort of green corridor. You see all these nice, you know, beautiful trees in the backyard, and also when I look out in the living room.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No.
All right. Thank you very much. Now, is Mr. Richter here?
Could I mute myself again?
Yes.
Thanks.
My name is Matthew Benson, and I'm assisting the applicant.
All right. We have a request for an adjournment from Mr. Richter.
You'll have a similar request from Mr. Benson also.
Yes. All right. I can tell you we've discussed this matter amongst ourselves, we are prepared to allow you to submit an updated application, provided it's done by the 29th of September. We have to put a time limit on these days. And that will then have to be the subject of an assessment report, a further assessment report, to be submitted to a following planning panel. Are you content with that course of action?
Speaking for the applicants, yes. That's our intention to get, that's our objective for today's meeting, yes.
And can you meet the deadline of the 29th of September?
We've got everything ready now, so yes, that's fine. Yep.
And this will deal with things like flood risk management, engineer, arborist, and so forth, all those things that are mentioned?
We've spent some $15,000 or $20,000 on consulting, and we've addressed every matter.
There is one thing that Ms. Calusi has mentioned. She referred to the possibility of overlooking from the stairs. What do you say about that?
I think that's fairly unlikely. The stairs are aligned to the alignment of the lane, and there's the shape of the roof that goes in. We can address that matter in the forthcoming additional information. We can do an analysis of views and illustrate that. In regards to height and bulk, just very briefly, the building is designed with within the envelopes that are described, an area of terraces, and the property is on the south side of the previous respondent's property as well. So it causes no overshadowing. It will change the views to the trees, but again, I could demonstrate that off a 3D model, that it still allows a significant view of the trees. The height of the wall is at about 3 metres, which is wholly aligned with the envelope controls.
I'd like to ask a question about the 3 metre wall. May I do so, Mr. Chair?
The proposal is...
Why 3 metres on the boundary? With Mrs.
That's within the controls for studios. It's a 7 metre wide terrace house, and DCP controls suggest that we should build boundary to boundary.
Any other questions from the panel at this stage? If not, well then the determination of the panel will be to accede to the applicant's request for a deferral, subject to an updated application to be furnished to the council by no later than the 29th of September. And the matter will then be the subject of a further assessment report for submission to a subsequent panel meeting. So that will be the determination today. Is everyone agreed?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. And Ms. Calusi, you'll be given another opportunity to comment on any further plans that come in.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. So with that, we can move on to the final item, item number 12. Item number 12 is the proposed eight-storey residential flat building in Morrell Street, Ashfield. We have both the architect and planner available. This is a recommendation for approval, and I can indicate that the panel is inclined to accept the recommendation, but do the applicant's architect and planner have any objections to that course?
Panel chair, it's Gary Chapman here from Chapman Planning.
Yes.
I don't know if you could see me. I haven't appeared up on your screen, but anyway, it says at my end the video is working, but anyway, I'm not suggesting you need to see me, by the way. there's obviously no objection for the recommendation for approval. I was going to go through the proposal, but you clearly understand it. I was only going to raise a couple of questions with conditions. And if I may then just take you to the conditions. And the first one my question, it may be on my version, so it's a clarity issue. It's condition 11 that talks about the adaptive
work. Can you go to the page number, Mr. Chapman, please?
I'm using the report I got emailed from the council, and I don't know if it corresponds to your page number because it's page 4 of the conditions.
Okay,
yep. I've got that. Oh, good. Okay, condition 11 talks about the adaptable dwellings. My version has, prior to issue of construction certificate, the certifying authority must be provided with plans that demonstrate XX units.
Yes, Luke.
There are two adaptable units. They are units 3 and 6. So if that's just needs to be clarified, we don't want some certifier misinterpreting that.
Yes.
And then if I could take you to page, it's page 7 of the conditions. It's the condition 22 about the dilapidation report.
Yes.
I'm wondering, I think this condition might need some refinement, noting that the adjoining properties are both residential flat buildings of over 30 plus units strated. It is very difficult, and I think maybe a little onerous to have it's just unclear whether the dilapidation report needs to be of each of those strata lots or units, or if it just refers to the external works surrounding on the adjoining sites, and also if the intent is that it's more than the external works and it is units, maybe the units need to be nominated, and those ones being adjoining or abutting the subject site.
Okay.
What was the question on that last condition? Sorry, Chair. I missed that. I was trying to find the number of adaptable units. It's somewhere in the report.
Right. Specify unit numbers for the dilapidation report as opposed to the whole of the buildings.
Dilapidation report.
Luke, it says the report is required to include colour photographs of all adjoining properties, and it's just difficult when you've got 30 plus strata units either side of you. It's not clear to a certifying authority whether it needs to be each unit, which I think would be onerous, or it's the external parts of those adjoining buildings.
Well, a strata plan is usually taken to be one property, and it's the affected parts of it normally for a dilapidation report. So normally a structural engineer who's preparing that report will tell you what the important parts are. But I'll talk to the panel about the wording of that condition after. Yep.
Thank you. That's it from me. Unless my architect, or not my architect, the applicant's architect would like to add anything. It's Leo Campbell.
Leo Campbell, Campbell Luscombe Architects. No, look, I've got nothing further to add. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, panel?
No.
Thanks very much. Mr. Chapman just needs to get his camera working.
You don't need to see me, Ms. Morrell.
All right.
Gary, did you say there was two adaptables in this scheme? Sorry?
Yeah, the plans, the issue D plans, the current plans have units 3 and 6 as the adaptable.
Sorry, I just couldn't find that in the report when you started talking.
No, I've just looked and I couldn't find it either.
The condition or...?
I can find the condition with XX in it.
Yeah.
I just couldn't find the number anywhere else in the plan as assessment.
No, I couldn't either. But if I could take you to... if it's on DA201, which is the floor plans, and there's level 2... has the adaptable unit 3, and then that's repeated at level 3, adaptable unit 6.
So what I propose is that we insert the words units 3 and 6 in condition 11, where there's an XX. Are we happy with that?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Any other questions?
No, thank you.
No.
Right. So you will get a consent in due course, and it will contain that slight alteration to condition 11, and we'll talk about condition 22. You're seeking that the dilapidation report be limited to those units abutting or adjoining the proposed development.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, panel.
And that, I think, concludes the public meeting. What the panel will now do is adjourn to a private meeting to discuss the details of each proposal. So, for the public, thank you very much. All right. Thank you very much.